Welcome to the podcast. It's April Fool's Day, and in response to that, big business leaders have just published a letter in the Tory Graph explaining why they are better off with the Tories. All I'll say is this: in Scotland we have more choice, and those of you with an SSP candidate know exactly what to do. In reply to the Tory-loving fat cats, I will state these bullet points. Tax avoiders, zero hours contracts, poverty wages, bedroom tax, NHS sell-off to tax avoiding, poverty wage paying, bedroom tax supporting big business CEOs. Oh, and Trident nuclear missiles 30 miles from Glasgow, currently primed and ready for big business profit-making war. On Scotland's most listened to socialist podcast today, SSP Glasgow East candidate Liam McLaughlin on his election campaign, singer-songwriter Joe Solo on his support for the miners and the mining communities, Jenny Gunn on remembering the conscientious objectors, SSP co-spokesperson Sandra Webster on the 1 in 5 campaign, Ben Irvine on the language of the left and socialist democracy, SNP socialist Deborah Torrance on her choice in the election, and Callum Martin will be continuing his delve into the history of the left. The music we have for the podcast this week is just brilliant, some of the best yet. Thief Action are a socialist R&B group from London. They quite firmly take sides in the class struggle. I've been a big fan since their first live vinyl album a few years back at Ebb Vale. Their new album, Reading Writing Revolution, will be released in June, but I've managed to get my hands on a limited pre-release copy, and I can say that it is their best album yet. I'll be playing tracks from the new album over the next few weeks, tracks such as Socialism, Utopian and Scientific, Police State, Strictly Come Marching and Equality. This is their new single. Go watch the excellent video on YouTube. This is Choose Your Enemy.
Let's start with a definition. A definition of war. War is when your government decides who you fear and insists on it with lords. How about if we all disagree? Having a true democracy. The powers that be keep us hungry. Work it out for yourself, you'll see. How about a war on poverty? Choose your enemy. Division by class and the boot of oligarchy and the muscle and the force. What they're battling for is equality, not a flux, the opposite of peace. Understand their conflict of a policy, capital, giant supremacy.
Songwriter, washing machine repairman from Scarborough, North Yorkshire. A couple of weeks ago, it was the 30th anniversary of the end of the 1984-85 miners' strike, I had the great honour and privilege of being asked to sing a few songs for the lads and lasses of Stainforth Pit Club as part of the commemorations there. We marched from the Broadway in Dunscroft, one of the strike headquarters back in the day, through to Stainforth to the corner of the old pit lane, once the scene of the picket line for Atfield Main, and now home to the strike memorial, set at the foot of the severed lamppost, which still stands as a reminder of the bitter battles between pickets and police in the late summer and autumn of 1984. At the Broadway, a new banner was unveiled, commemorating the great work done in the strike and beyond by Women Against Pit Closures, and depicting images of inspirational figures for the movement, both locally, nationally and internationally, including the great Scottish miners' leader, Mick McGarry. It struck me over the last few years how people view historical events as being somehow isolated, disconnected and remote from our own lives. But history is a running narrative, and what happened to the miners back then, and the health workers and steel workers before them, through the industrial genocide of the 1980s to the steady drip, drip, drip privatisation of the NHS and the dismantling of the welfare state today, is all part of that same narrative, that same process. Namely, the systematic stripping back and selling off of all publicly owned assets for private gain. The miners saw this coming and stood in the way. They came close to winning too. And what a different island this might have been if they defeated the most vicious government in living memory. They could have done it too with more support. But we as a nation, we let them down. The public, too quick to spit and slaver while being spoon-fed government-issued propaganda against them. A Labour Party who stabbed them in the back. The TUC who said one thing and did another. And all the other unions who decided it wasn't their fight and hung Scargill and McGuy out to dry and fed the miners to the lions. While it's great to see the anti-cuts protest today and people marching, trying to do something for their country, trying to make the world a better place, it's still window dressing compared to what might have been. How many of us just go back to our jobs on Monday morning and carry on kowtowing to the boss, yes sir, no sir, three bags full sir, afraid for our jobs, because our rights have gone, because our unions have no teeth, because 30 years ago they ran scared instead of standing shoulder to shoulder with the NUM. How many would be willing to go an entire year without wages, fighting not only for their future, but their children's future, and the future of their entire community, in fact, their entire way of life? Not many. It was one of the proudest moments of my life to march alongside the Atfield Brigade, to see their spirit and their strength, their solidarity and their defiance that still burns as brightly today as it ever did. It might be a fight they lost, but that doesn't matter. What matters is the fight itself. The fact that they drew a line in the sand and were willing to go to war for the future. A future that understood value outweighs cost and that people matter. The example that they set shines on and it will inspire for generations to come. But make no mistake about it. The people that strip and slash and burn will keep coming, and one day we will have to draw a line in the sand and stand toe to toe with these people to fight for our future, for our world. Maybe then we might understand what Mick McGarry meant when he said, if you don't run, they can't chase you. This song is called The Long March Back. It goes out not only to the lads and lasses of the Atfield Brigade, but to all striking miners and their families who endured so much for so long and deserved better.
When I march beneath that banner, it's with a sense of pride. My brothers and my sisters marching right here at my side. We're marching for the past, yeah, but it's for the future too. They came for us, they'll come for you. When I march beneath that banner, I know where I belong. So with system is always at my back and struggle for so long to save our jobs, our homes, our families. Tell me, what else could we do? They came for us, they'll come for you. So I'm singing fine, a banner. Trade, but not the stand we made. So come on, fly the banner high. I learned some good things, though, I know beyond a doubt. If everybody pulls together, no one goes without. I know a little goes a long, long way, and used as good as new. They came for us, they'll come for you. So I'm singing flying a banner. Trade, but not the stand we made. So come on, fly the banner. Beneath that banner is with a sense of pride. Though we never bust the piddling scabbing for the other side, I know when fate it came a calling, we stood loyal, strong and true. They came for us, they'll come for you. So get singing, flying a banner high, flying a banner high. They can take away our trade, but not the stand we made. So come on, fly the banner high. Take away our trade, but not the stand we all made. So come on, fly the banner.
Hi there, my name's Liam McLaughlin. I'm the Scottish Socialist Party candidate for Glasgow East in May's general election. In the next couple of minutes, I'm going to give you a wee bit of history about the Glasgow East seat, what we hope to achieve by standing in the seat, and what we've been doing so far, and what's still to come as well in our campaign. So a wee bit of history about Glasgow East. It's been a traditional Labour heartland for the 1930s, all bar a surprise by-election win in 2008 for the SNP by 300-odd votes on a recount. The seat used to be two seats until boundary changes in 2005. It used to be the Bayliston seats and the Shettleston seats, and the Shettleston seat was once took up by the late, great John Wheatley. So it's on that tradition that the area's got a strong left-wing socialist connection that we are standing in the election in May. What we hope to achieve is we hope to achieve a respectable voting figure. We expect to grow the party in the area, which we've already done, which I'll reference in a wee minute, and we hope to build the party name and profile in the area as well, with a longer term view, looking at both next year's Scottish Parliament elections and the Glasgow City Council elections of 2017. So on Monday night we had our first public meeting, as it was the first day that the official election period kicked off, with a public meeting on the demands for £10 an hour national minimum wage for all over 16, an end to 0 hour contracts up at St Benedict's and Lock End. And despite what was atrocious weather and what's supposed to be British summertime, and it's rained ever since, we changed the clocks on Saturday. We managed to get about 35 to 40 people for the local area in at the meeting, and we managed to recruit 4 new members to the party on a local basis. So already we've fulfilled one of our goals, which at the start of the campaign was to grow the branch in the area, which sprung up in the aftermath of the referendum, which saw 3,000 people join the Scottish Socialist Party in the 4 days after the referendum. So we've got plans in the area. Hopefully we're supposed to be getting out today, but to do a street stall, but the weather's unfortunately put an end to that. So we'll be out tomorrow, again, weather permitting, with a street stall at Parkhead Forge. We are hopefully going out tonight to leaflet another scheme in Easterhouse. And over the next few weeks, we're hoping to arrange another public meeting in another area of the constituency. The hustings are coming up in the next few weeks, the first one being a week on Monday. So we look forward to that, and we're looking forward to being able to hold the other representatives to account and highlight their unique socialist message of £10 an hour minimum wage, an end to 0 hour contracts, and for a locally based working class MP on a worker's wage. If anybody wants to help and get involved in the campaign, you can email me at liammcl, that's liammcl1996@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at Liam McLaughlin. Any help at all is appreciated, even if it's just coming up to help us leaflet, if it's helping run a street stall, if it's helping us promote the public meeting, or if anybody wants to donate to the campaign fund, that would also be greatly appreciated. So we're hoping to do well here in Glasgow East. We've already fulfilled one of our goals, as I said, and we're looking forward to the next 4 or 5 weeks and what will be hopefully an enjoyable and fun campaign to be involved in. Thank you very much.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You might hate the Tories, but they don't know what being poor is. And abandoning our position also hates the coalition. You might say if you were us, they're not fit for purpose. But you know what we're gonna say. Yeah, you know what we're gonna say. What we've got to do something about it, yeah, we've got to do something about it, it's time to do something about it, come on, let's do something about it. You know that there's a war on, and you know that it's wrong, and we bet that you hate death of the welfare state. But you know what the worst is? The selling of the health service. Well, you know what we're gonna say. Yeah, you know what we're gonna say. What we've got to do something about it. Yeah, we've gotta do something about it. It's time to do something about it. Let's do something about it. So before you ask the question, I'm gonna make a suggestion. Talk to your neighbours, those closest to you. You never know, they might feel like you do. Talk to them at work, talk to them at home, talk face to face, talk on the phone, send them an email, write a newsletter, organise a meeting, might be even better, cos if you really want to have a revolution, everybody needs to make a contribution.
talk to Attila. He'll tell you about Stalin, but don't talk to Cliff. He'll just tell you about Hank Moore. He'll talk to the faction, the GDH Cole. Talk to Chuck Berry, but it's only rock and roll. Talk to Billy Bragg, the activist, but Davy Robicks is a better anarchist. And if you really want to have a revolution, everybody needs to make a contribution. Talk to your comrades in the SWP, your brothers and sisters in the Labour Party. Stand shoulder to shoulder with the TUSC and the barricades with the CPGB. And don't forget the anarchists too, cause they all want the same things as you. And if you really want to have a revolution, everybody needs to make a contribution. Well, you've heard what we've got to say. Yeah, you've heard what we've got to say. That's all that we're gonna say. What we've got to do something about it. Yeah, we've gotta do something about it. It's time to do something about it. Come on, let's do something. Do something.
Steve, you left out the SSP. Anyway, that was Steve White and the Protest Family and Do Something About It.
Hi folks, my name is Jenny Gunn. I'm from Stirling SSP and I want to talk a little bit today about conscientious objectors. So as the old saying goes, history is too often written by the victors. History and the context in which we talk about our past is largely dictated to us by the establishment. By the mainstream media, by the state, and through our educational institutions. And our collective history and our collective memory as a nation is really crucial to understanding who we are and where we come from. And this often dictates the political discourse of nations and forms a picture of how we see ourselves in the world. So for this reason, dissenting voices are all too often overlooked, and that's what I want to talk about today. As last year marked the centenary of the beginning of the First World War, anyone who's grown up in this country will be all too aware of the fanfare that surrounds Armistice Day. And while some dissident voices are often honoured during our remembrance, such as the soldier and poet Wilfred Owen, more often than not we don't hear about the heroism of these men who refused to fight. And make no mistake, these men were heroes, and their decision to fight was not one of cowardice. Despite the fact that the press at the time labelled these men as degenerates and women were encouraged to pin white feathers on the lapels of conscientious objectors, their stance was so principled, and in my opinion, they should be honoured for their courage in standing for peace. Conscientious objectors received harsh treatment. Many were sent to labour camps like the camp near Dyce in Aberdeen and lived in horrendous conditions where disease was rife, there was forced labour, and countless numbers died of diseases such as pneumonia. Now, one of Scotland's most famous opponents of conscription was John McLean. McLean stood against the First World War. Now, McLean's socialism informed his principles, and he saw the war as an imperialist conflict set to divide the workers of the world, all for the whims of the privileged and the powerful in their scramble for power and empire. In 1915, he was arrested and charged under the Defence of the Realm Act. He lost his teaching post at the Lawrence Street Primary School. But he was undeterred and became a full-time organiser and champion of the working classes. He took his teaching skills to the docks and educated workers in Marxist theory, and he was determined to give working class people the knowledge they needed to fight oppression. He was arrested again in 1916 for his involvement with the anti-war movement, but he was released in 1917 after a nationwide demonstration in the wake of the February Revolution in Russia. Alas, McLean's freedom was to be short-lived, and in 1918 he was imprisoned for sedition and sentenced to 5 years penal servitude at Peterhead Prison in Aberdeenshire. And McLean conducted his own defence at his trial, and his speech from the dock, which I'd encourage everyone to read, is passed into legend. I'd like to read a wee extract from his speech just now, which reads, "I wish no harm to any human being, but I, as one man, am going to exercise my freedom of speech. No human being of the face of the earth, no government is going to take from me my right to speak, my right to protest against wrong, my right to do everything that is for the benefit of mankind. I am not here, then, as the accused. I am here as the accuser of capitalism, dripping with blood from head to foot. A campaign was immediately launched to have McLean released from prison in the wake of his trial. And the war ended in November of the same year, and McLean was subsequently released on the 3rd of December 1918 and arrived back in his native Glasgow to huge crowds celebrating his return. And despite being imprisoned for less than a year, the combination of the conditions in which he lived in Peterhead and his forced feeding by guards due to his hunger strike meant that his health deteriorated very quickly after his release. And unfortunately, John McLean died of pneumonia in 1923, aged just 44. It's my opinion that we have a duty to remember those like McLean who suffered at the hands of the British establishment for their belief in peace and solidarity with their fellow humans. Now, not all objectors were driven by ideological convictions or socialism, some were driven by religious beliefs, but nonetheless, these brave men who dared to speak out for peace and brotherhood deserve to be honoured with the same dignity that we reserve for those who died in battle. These men sacrificed too, and we must never forget their sacrifice. And this is why I support the petition launched by Edinburgh Peace and Justice Centre that has asked Edinburgh City Council to grant the use of a permanent public space in Princes Street Gardens to found a memorial for those who fought conscription and refused to fight in an imperialist war. Until we start to tell the stories of these men, until these stories become part of our collective narrative, we can never hope to learn the lessons that they sought to teach us. So I'd urge everyone listening to go to Edinburgh City Council's website and sign the petition, because as the old saying goes, lest we forget.
As I said before, we have some really brilliant music in this week's podcast. Next up, Glasgow group The Just Janes with Hey Boy, You're Oh So Sensitive, followed by David Rovick's Welcome to the Working Class, and then Paisley Band, Travel Cat and Let Your Loss. If you're an unsigned or independent singer or band, please send me your stuff and you'll get an airing unless the title of your album is Tories Forever. Email me at neilwscott@hotmail.com. These are the Just Janes.
Alright ladies, any who's into Tallulah Gosh?
Chance I could get your number. Any chance we could do some kissing?
Hey boy, you're also sensitive.
My name is Ben Irvin. I'm the convener for the Inverclyde branch of the Scottish Socialist Party. The term socialist democracy is one that is heard frequently these days, although some people who use the term seem to be confusing it with the similar sounding social democracy. Socialist democracy does not mean just voting for the socialist candidate, or even the availability of a socialist candidate to vote for. Socialists don't believe that by getting to put a cross in a box every 4 years or so, that we are somehow experiencing democracy. So what does the term socialist democracy really mean? Now, while this might sound strange to consumers of the Western mainstream media, Soviet thinkers from the earliest days of their activities had developed a political philosophy in terms of a certain concept of democracy. Lenin constantly refers to democracy in his writings, although some of his statements, when taken out of context, seem to imply its rejection. I don't mean this to sound like a Soviet nostalgia piece. Clearly there were lots of negatives to the Soviet system, but there were also at least as many positives, and we should be mature enough to look back at the Soviet Union and be able to talk of those positive aspects which are worth still struggling for. Under the Soviets, for example, there was no involuntary unemployment. Everyone was guaranteed a home. All levels of education were free, and everyone had access to free healthcare. Clearly these are all policies that any of us would support, so it shouldn't come as a surprise that there are many other Soviet ideas that we could also support. And for the most part, their concept of socialist democracy, a democracy that extends beyond the political sphere, is such an idea. A Soviet or socialist democracy is a higher stage of democracy than anything we've achieved so far in the West, in the sense that its range extends beyond politics and into spheres such as economic, cultural and domestic life, as well as to the realm of racial and national problems. For socialists, democracy has a vital relation to all social institutions. Democracy is not a form of government, it is a principle of government. I want to summarise a few examples of true socialist democracy, but be aware that full volumes have been written on this subject, and a deep understanding will require a lot more to be said than what I can say in a short piece like this. In the economic sphere, socialist democracy means that every single adult, willing and able to work, has an inalienable right to continuous employment at the levels of their qualifications, free from exploitation and with participation in planning and management. Richie Venton of the Scottish Socialist Party has some great ideas about trade unions having representation on the boards of companies, and this is just one example of how the Scottish Socialist Party supports genuine socialist democracy. When we look at the domestic sphere, we find that socialist democracy does far more to ensure equality of the sexes than its capitalist alternative. While our capitalist countries claim to have ensured equality for women, simple experience of our societies tells us there is still massive inequality. Let me use the USSR for this example, because despite what some on the left may think, the simple fact is that there were many positive aspects to the Soviet Union which we shouldn't be scared to talk about. Pre-war, USSR saw the biggest population growth in Europe. This might suggest that women were only occupied with making babies and raising a family. Nothing could be further from the truth, as Soviet women were employed in a greater variety of occupations than in any other country, and in a greater ratio to total population. When women didn't have to choose between having a family and having a career, they were able to do both, and the vast majority of Soviet women did both. Even today, it's apparent that for most women in the West, having both their desired career and their desired family just isn't an option. By extending democracy into the domestic sphere, by ensuring an abundance of state-funded facilities such as nurseries and maternity leave, and by enacting legislation that actually does deliver equality, women are given genuine control over their lives, a democratic decision-making control which allows them to genuinely make decisions about career and family on an equal footing with men making the same decisions. There are plenty more examples of socialist democracy, both in the political sphere and, most importantly, beyond it. But I hope that what I've said here convinces you that socialist democracy is far bigger than just voting for the socialist candidate every 4 years.
The average annual income of the richest 1% is about 700 grand. The average annual income of the poorest 1% is a couple of food stamps and a pile of sand. Smack dab in the middle, 350,000, but that's actually the top 4%. Most everybody else, say, in the bottom 80, is struggling to pay their mortgage or their rent. You who say you're in the middle, I wonder what you mean in the middle of what and what. I'd say you're probably full of something that hopefully soon will be coming out of your butt. I could join you in your fantasy, but I think I'll have to pass and just say welcome to the working class. If you're wondering how you might send your kids to college, if your savings is smaller than your debt, if your main mode of transport is an auto or a pickup, not a helicopter or a private jet. If you drive yourself to the supermarket, you know where to find the milk upon the shelf. If you bring the groceries home and then you cook the food all by yourself. If your idea of a night out is ordering takeout and watching a DVD. If your idea of social mobility is the fact that you have broadband and a high-definition TV, you can try to convince me that you're in the bourgeoisie, or you can just stop smoking that grass and let me say welcome to the working class. Welcome, welcome to the working class. If half your income's spent on taxes, no second home on a tropic isle, if flying in economy and renting a car is your notion of vacationing in style, if you've never seen the world's seven wonders, and you think you probably never will, because you only get 2 weeks holiday each year and you just don't have the time to kill, if you think because you're employed and have a roof over your heads that you're so very privileged because your kids sleep in separate beds, but you can't afford the rest home for your parents and it's you who's gotta wipe their asses, well, let me say welcome to the working class. Welcome, welcome to the working class.
Hello, I'm Deborah Torrance, a member of the SNP branch here in Mogai. Have you ever done that political compass test? You know, the one that tells you where you sit in the spectrum of left to right, authoritarian or libertarian? There is one that plots out the current political parties too, based on their policies, etc. I'll ask Neil to post a pic and link to it. As it turns out, I'm as left as the SSP and more libertarian than the Greens, which might be a wee bit surprising considering SNP are to the centre-left. We can't deny that SNP do popular policies. My Labour friend often cites, "But SNP are just a populist party." But what does that actually mean? They create policy that is popular with the people of Scotland. Is that a bad thing? In the upcoming election, you're going to hear all about tactical voting and how to keep the Tories out of government. I'm going to suggest that if you're an SSP member who doesn't have an SSP candidate standing in your area and maybe thinking of voting Labour, please reconsider. On this political compass image, Labour are on the right, just behind DUP and Lib Dems. That's quite frightening when you think of where they started. Why this swing? I think it's because they have to pander to the traditional Tory voters in the South. This is the trouble with Westminster, the democratic deficit. The current electoral system of first-past-the-post means smaller parties like the Socialists and Greens can never get fair representation. How do we remedy this? Can we? Will the big parties ever vote to allow this change? Unlikely, considering it will mean they lose seats, eh? So why consider voting SNP when you are a socialist? Well, Nicola herself is quite the lefty. Our First Minister wants social justice, equality, fairness. If you've not seen her recent speech at the SNP conference, I urge you to go and watch it on YouTube. Also, I think the SNP are our only way to achieve independence. With independence comes reform on the electoral system. I've even voted Green in proportional representation elections in the past. At Holyrood, the additional members system means we can have a rainbow parliament, vote SNP, SSP, Green as one, two or three interchangeably, and we have a fair representation. Sending more Labour MPs to Westminster will never help us achieve that. In my area, Eastern Bartonshire, our MP is a Lib Dem. It hasn't bode too well. No rebelling against the party whip, really. Maybe once. Voting against a moratorium on fracking, against tax cuts for small businesses, and against more free childcare. In this area, at least. I would never say don't vote Green, because the candidate here is a brilliant young man. But I would seriously urge you to not vote Labour, Lib Dems, or unthinkably Tories, and consider giving the SNP candidate a shot. A shot at challenging the Westminster system. A shot at getting Scotland's voice heard in the Commons louder than ever before.
Right, it's recording.
Travel Cat Day Centre.
1, 2, 3, 4.
A good woman, but I just didn't treat her right. Now I was always leaving, living a party life. True love was waiting for me, but I was much too blind to till she told me she would leave me. And I said, that's all right with me. No, and now she's gone. I realized I lost the best thing there is. And my pride keeps telling me, let your loss be your blessing. Heaven knows I miss her loving. Heaven knows how much I cry. Just to think she had left me. No reason why. I could tell she had been crying. Didn't seem to bother me. 'Cause I know there's no one blinder than a fool who just couldn't see. No, and now she's gone. I realize I lost the best thing there is. And my pride keeps telling me, let your loss be your blessing. Thank you.
really proud that the SSPEC recently decided to support the 1 in 5 campaign. As someone who lives with long-term health conditions and has two sons with autism, I really appreciate how important it is that we as a party and as a society in general give people with disabilities that extra support to feel able to participate and be the same as everyone else. This can't be lip service. It should be a statement of intent about what is right. Society is becoming like the mirror in the Snow Queen, broken and scattered into a thousand shards. Not like the mirror in Alice with a Looking Glass, a place to dream, to stretch and grow. The mirror must reflect back, not just our individual selves, but the wider, vibrant community that we deserve to be. People with disabilities and long-term health conditions have been among the first to be affected by the cuts. Day centres are closing. People instead have to spend their day walking around shopping malls like the Walking Dead. Self-directed support is supposed to empower, but the evidence on the ground is very contrary and very, very frightening. We must have more people with disabilities representing us, being part of our lives, not just shoved to the edge. That's why I'm so proud that the SSP signed up to the 1 in 5 and all in its statement of intent. Jamie, who's organised this, is doing an amazing job. I'm proud that we were the third party to sign up. Diversity in any party, and especially in the SSP, is a good thing and must be welcomed. Only then can we truly represent many people whose voices are nothing but a whisper these days, and these whispers must be heard.
Light my candle when you come. See my name in your mouth before you come. Show me all the secrets in your head. Write something dirty across my bed. I was wasted below my knees, and the white birds would bleed. And she touched me in some sacred way, made me feel this need. It's like nails into my feathered back, like rain inside my hair of black. It's like swimming through some liquid of mine that I can no longer see. Arms harassing the water, fingers through the waves. She didn't fail to be the opposite of gravity. She didn't need to be on the inside of my sobriety and my poetry. Or the white dress that fell down below my knees. Where the white birds, please. Wash me in the river. With the dawn, take away our beauty if it's wrong. My knees go deep down into the dirt. God has made me dirty like the earth. Saw the darkness of the world beneath, or the light of the sun that I can see. She did not give these things to me on the path that led through the rocks, on the cliff on which I would walk. And I could hear the demons talk, for the dreams upon the dreams through this journey of mine and the water below my bare feet, putting the sky beneath my dress. The history of it is just this mess, climbing higher. And I'm just going to keep walking. Perhaps I will spread these wings, and these crazy wings of fire on the earth while she perspires, She's breathless like I am, air above her hair. And above that, there, where I once was led, where I once was fed, where I once played in their heads and let the doors and left them wide open. Lover gave me dirty clothes to wear. Lover, he took his flowers from my hair. I don't have no mercy on me there. But he put dirty pictures in my head. Nothing leads me further than my fingers as they lifted above my chin and pointed west. And that's where I would walk for hours in the small world behind my freckled eyes. Those things that would lead me there in some surreal way, surrounding everything I ever had, ever knew. What was bad was blue. In the river with the dawn. Take away our beauty if it's wrong. My knees go deep down to the dirt. 'Cause God has made me dirty like the earth. God has made me dirty. Like the earth. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was the superb singer-songwriter Susan Jewell. Remember to check out our website www.scottishsocialistparty.org, and if you're on Twitter, follow at the underscore SSP underscore, and me if you like, at NW Socialist. And if you have any music or recorded views you'd like to send me, email me at neilwscott@hotmail.com. After Callum's brilliant piece on Thomas Muir of Hunter's Hill, I'll end with a track from the new Thief Action album you can order from their website, thiefaction.org. The track is called Bastards.
Hello, and welcome to Making the Flag Red, a series looking at the struggle for democracy through history. I'm Callum Martin of Edinburgh South and Midlothian SSP, and this week we're looking at one of the leading figures of the democratic movement in Scotland around the end of the 18th century, Thomas Muir. Also known as Thomas Muir of Hunter's Hill, Muir was born in Milton of Campsie in eastern Bartonshire on the 25th of August, 1765. Throughout his life, Muir would remain a devout and sincere Presbyterian, and the guiding principles of Auld Licht Calvinism, of close lineage to the works of the Covenanters, who previously brought down the royalist regime of Charles I in the Scottish Revolution of 1638, would often be apparent in his work. Muir began to gain prominence after beginning studies at Glasgow University between 1775 and 1777, finally graduating from an MA degree in 1782. At this stage he continued at the university but began training as a lawyer and also began to take up a greater involvement in political questions of the day. Several of his professors were part of the radical end of the Whig Party we looked at briefly last week and supported various processes of republican and egalitarian reform. Muir engaged with these questions with a great passion, supporting electoral reform, American independence and an end to patronage. Muir soon transferred to Edinburgh University after a protest against the unfair sacking of a member of staff at Glasgow University, largely on political grounds, where he completed his legal training. It was in 1790 that Muir's talents, principles and trainings would first all come together to great public visibility, though. A key Presbyterian principle going back through the Covenanters was the right of congregations to select their own ministers. Now, given the role of ministers as part of the representation of congregations at the General Assembly of the Kirk of Scotland, a body of noticeable political influence, this represented both a field and a political issue, as after the Union of 1707, Westminster succeeded where earlier waves of Jacobites had failed, and imposed a patronage act which would last an immense length of time despite immense popular resistance in Scotland. Now this patronage act in essence gave landowners the power to appoint ministers instead of the congregation. in an age where Scotland had no parliament, and what few seats it had at Westminster were firmly in the pocket of a powerful and conservative political figure of Henry Dundas, this was a key part of the democratic movement as well as a serious theological issue. Now, when one particular congregation in 1790 tried to resist the attempts of their landowner to select their new minister, it was Thomas Muir who would take up the case in the legal court system. Muir fought the legal case for the rights of the congregation at every level right up to the General Assembly, which finally ruled in favour of Muir and the congregation, and the landlord's case was thrown out. Muir at this stage began to continue to gain a reputation as being a man of immense courage and principle, taking on cases even for no fee for the poor and destitute, as he believed that the laws of Scotland were being twisted against the poor and downtrodden. This soon gained him the suspicions and hostility of many figures within Dundas's establishment. It was when the French Revolution broke out, however, that things took an even more dramatic turn. Muir quickly became involved with the Friends of the People and the Reform Societies we looked at last week, and on the 2nd of January 1793, he was arrested on charges of sedition for his association with these groups and also with groups in Ireland. His trial drew much attention, and his admirer Robert Burns is said to have penned Scots Wahey in his honour, something we'll come back to look at later on. Muir, however, managed to make bail the first time he was tried, before too long, and after various exploits in revolutionary France, in Ireland on the brink of open warfare, and further time spent trying to build a consolidated reformist political force in Scotland, he was arrested again and transported to Australia. The story doesn't end there, however. Shortly after arriving to the prison colony in Australia, Muir was rescued by a ship named the Otter from the Young Republic of America, fresh from its revolution against the British Crown, and was sailed across the still largely uncharted Pacific Ocean to reach the west coast of Canada, thus escaping imprisonment in Australia. Once in Canada, on the west coast, he found berth on a Spanish ship travelling down the west coast of America, past Spanish-controlled California, and into Spanish Mexico, from whence, after a spell of imprisonment on suspected espionage, he was partially released to Spanish Cuba, from where he sought travel back to Europe. Now, by 1797, Muir was on board a Spanish ship bound for Cadiz, from whence he could reach France or Scotland. At the last moment, however, this ship came under attack by the British Royal Navy. In the engagement, Muir took a large piece of shrapnel to the head and lost the use of one of his eyes. In the event, this may have saved his life, for the time being, though. One of the crew revealed that Muir had been on board to the British officers boarding the ship, and cost covered in blood, Muir was able to escape amongst wounded Spanish sailors sent ashore, never being identified by the British officers. Muir was determined to make his way back to France or Scotland to continue the political struggle, but he was still technically a prisoner of the Spanish Empire on suspicions of spying, for which he'd been arrested in Mexico. But the French Republican regime managed to secure his release to France. He was exiled permanently from Spanish territory, but made his way, still suffering from his injuries, to France, where, arriving at Bordeaux, he was hailed as a hero of the French Revolutionary, and indeed wider revolutionary movement. Reaching Paris, Muir engaged himself with Scottish politics once more, albeit from a distance, and was involved in lobbying the French government to support a military intervention to help establish a revolution in Scotland and establish a Scottish Republic. On the 26th of January 1799, however, Thomas Muir passed away, sustained from injuries on board the ship to Cadiz. The military intervention from France never came, but his legacy lives on. To this day, there are monuments to Muir on both Hunter's Hill itself and on Calton Hill in Edinburgh. Muir's vision of a Scottish Republic is not yet with us, but a figure such as Muir would surely look upon the works of folk like the Scottish Socialist Party with an immense deal of approval. His vision of an egalitarian, modern republic lives on.